Chapter 76. The Iron Master, Sir Leicester Dedlock, has got the better, for the time being, of the family gout, and is once more, in a literal no less than in a figurative point of view, upon his legs. He is at his place in Lincolnshire, but the waters are out again on the low-lying grounds, and the cold and damp steel into Chesney Wold, though well defended, and eke into Sir Leicester's bones. The blazing fires of faggot and coal deadlock timber and antediluvian forest, that blaze upon the broad white hearths and wink in the twilight on the frowning woods, sullen to see how trees are sacrificed, do not exclude the enemy. The hot water pipes that trail themselves all over the house, the cushioned doors and windows, and the screens and curtains fail to supply the fire's deficiencies, and to satisfy Sir Leicester's need. Hence the fashionable intelligence proclaims one morning to the listening earth, that Lady Dedlock is expected shortly, to return to town for a few weeks. It is a melancholy truth, that even great men have their poor relations. Indeed great men have often more than their fair share of poor relations, inasmuch as very red blood of the superior quality, like inferior blood unlawfully shed, will cry aloud, and will be heard. Sir Leicester's cousins, in the remotest degree, are so many murders in the respect, that they will out. Among whom there are cousins who are so poor, that one might almost dare to think it would have been the happier for them never, to have been plated links upon the deadlock chain of gold, but to have been made of common iron at first, and done base service. Service, however, with a few limited reservations. Genteel but not profitable, they may not do, being of the deadlock dignity. So they visit their richer cousins, and get into debt when they can, and live but shabbily when they can't, and find the women no husbands, and the men no wives, and ride in borrowed carriages, and sit at feasts, that are never of their own making, and so go through high life. The rich family sum has been divided by so many figures, and they are the something over, that nobody knows what to do with. Everybody on Sir Leicester Dedlock's side of the question, and of his way of thinking, would appear to be his cousin more or less. From my Lord Boodle, through the Duke of Foodle, down to Noodle, Sir Leicester, like a glorious spider, stretches his threads of relationship. But while he is stately in the cousinship of the everybodies, he is a kind and generous man, according to his dignified way, in the cousinship of the nobodies, and at the present time, in despite of the damp, he stays out the visit of several such cousins at Chesney Wold with the constancy of a martyr. Of these, foremost in the front rank stands Volumnia Dedlock, a young lady of 60, who is doubly highly related, having the honor to be a poor relation, by the mother's side, to another great family. Miss Volumnia, displaying in early life a pretty talent for cutting ornaments out of colored paper, and also for singing to the guitar in the Spanish tongue, and propounding French conundrums in country houses, passed the 20 years of her existence between 20 and 40 in a sufficiently agreeable manner. Lapsing then out of date, and being considered to bore mankind by her vocal performances in the Spanish language, she retired to Bath, where she lives slenderly on an annual present from Sir Leicester, and whence she makes occasional resurrections in the country houses of her cousins. She has an extensive acquaintance at Bath among appalling old gentlemen with thin legs and nankeen trousers, and is of high standing in that dreary city. But she is a little dreaded elsewhere in consequence of an indiscreet profusion in the article of rouge and persistency in an obsolete pearl necklace like a rosary of little birds' eggs. In any country in a wholesome state, Volumnia would be a clear case for the pension list. Efforts have been made to get her on it, and when William Buffy came in, it was fully expected that her name would be put down for a couple of hundred a year. But William Buffy somehow discovered, contrary to all expectation, that these were not the times when it could be done, and this was the first clear indication Sir Leicester Dedlock had conveyed to him that the country was going to pieces. There is likewise the Honorable Bob Stables, who can make warm mashes with the skill of a veterinary surgeon, and is a better shot than most gamekeepers. He has been for some time particularly desirous to serve his country in a post of good emoluments, unaccompanied by any trouble or responsibility. In a well-regulated body politic, this natural desire on the part of a spirited young gentleman so highly connected would be speedily recognized. But somehow William Buffy found when he came in that these were not times in which he could manage that little matter either, and this was the second indication Sir Leicester Dedlock had conveyed to him that the country was going to pieces. The rest of the cousins are ladies and gentlemen of various ages and capacities, the major part amiable and sensible and likely to have done well enough in life if they could have overcome their cousinship. As it is, they are almost all a little worsted by it, and lounge in purposeless and listless paths, and seem to be quite as much at a loss how to dispose of themselves as anybody else can be how to dispose of them. In this society, and where not, my Lady Dedlock reigns supreme. Beautiful, elegant, accomplished, and powerful in her little world, for the world of fashion does not stretch all the way from pole to pole, her influence in Sir Leicester's house, however haughty and indifferent her manner, is greatly to improve it and refine it. The cousins, even those older cousins who were paralyzed when Sir Leicester married her, do her feudal homage. And the Honorable Bob Stables daily repeats to some chosen person between breakfast and lunch his favorite original remark, that she is the best groomed woman in the whole stud. Such the guests in the long drawing room at Chesney Wold this dismal night, when the step on the ghost's walk, inaudible here, however, might be the step of a deceased cousin shut out in the cold. It is near bedtime. Bedroom fires blaze brightly all over the house, raising ghosts of grim furniture on wall and ceiling. Bedroom candlesticks bristle on the distant table by the door, and cousins yawn on ottomans. Cousins at the piano, cousins at the soda water tray, cousins rising from the card table, cousins gathered round the fire. Standing on one side of his own peculiar fire, for there are two, Sir Leicester. On the opposite side of the broad hearth, my lady at her table. Volumnia, as one of the more privileged cousins, in a luxurious chair between them. Sir Leicester glancing, with magnificent displeasure, at the rouge and the pearl necklace. I occasionally meet on my staircase here, drawls Volumnia, whose thoughts perhaps are already hopping up to bed, after a long evening of very desultory talk, one of the prettiest girls, I think, that I ever saw in my life. A protege of my lady's, observed Sir Leicester. I thought so. I felt sure that some uncommon I must have picked that girl out. She really is a marvel. A dolly sort of beauty perhaps, says Miss Volumnia, reserving her own sort, but in its way, perfect. Such bloom I never saw. Sir Leicester, with his magnificent glance of displeasure at the rouge, appears to say so too. Indeed, remarks my lady languidly, if there is any uncommon eye in the case, it is Mrs. Rouncewell's, and not mine. Rosa is her discovery. Your maid, I suppose? No. My anything, pet secretary messenger I don't know what. You like to have her about you, as you would like to have a flower, or a bird, or a picture, or a poodle, no, not a poodle, though, or anything else, that was equally pretty, says Volumnia, sympathizing. Yes, how charming now. And how well that delightful old soul Mrs. Rouncewell is looking. She must be an immense age, and yet she is as active and handsome. She is the dearest friend I have, positively. Sir Leicester feels it to be right and fitting that the housekeeper of Chesney Wold should be a remarkable person. Apart from that, he has a real regard for Mrs. Rouncewell, and likes to hear her praised. So he says, "You are right, Volumnia," which Volumnia is extremely glad to hear. She has no daughter of her own, has she? Mrs. Rouncewell? No, Volumnia. She has a son. Indeed, she had two. My lady, whose chronic malady of boredom has been sadly aggravated by Volumnia this evening, glances wearily towards the candlesticks and heaves a noiseless sigh. And it is a remarkable example of the confusion into which the present age has fallen, of the obliteration of landmarks, the opening of floodgates, and the uprooting of distinctions, says Sir Leicester with stately gloom, that I have been informed by Mr. Tulkinghorn that Mrs. Rouncewell's son has been invited to go into Parliament. Miss Volumnia utters a little sharp scream. Yes, indeed, repeats Sir Leicester. Into Parliament? I never heard of such a thing. Good gracious, what is the man? Exclaims Volumnia. He is called, I believe, an ironmaster. Sir Leicester says it slowly, and with gravity and doubt, as not being sure, but that he is called a lead mistress, or that the right word may be some other word expressive of some other relationship to some other metal. Volumnia utters another little scream. He has declined the proposal, if my information from Mr. Tulkinghorn be correct, as I have no doubt it is. Mr. Tulkinghorn being always correct and exact, still that does not, says Sir Leicester, that does not lessen the anomaly, which is fraught with strange considerations, startling considerations, as it appears to me. Miss Volumnia rising with a look candlestick wards, Sir Leicester politely performs the grand tour of the drawing room, brings one, and lights it at my lady's shaded lamp. I must beg you, my lady, he says while doing so, to remain a few moments, for this individual of whom I speak arrived this evening shortly before dinner, and requested in a very becoming note. Sir Leicester, with his habitual regard to truth, dwells upon it, I am bound to say, in a very becoming and well-expressed note, the favor of a short interview with yourself and myself on the subject of this young girl. As it appeared that he wished to depart tonight, I replied that we would see him before retiring. Miss Volumnia with a third little scream takes flight, wishing her host so lud. Well rid of the what is it? Ironmaster. The other cousins soon disperse, to the last cousin there. Sir Leicester rings the bell, make my compliments to Mr. Rouncewell, in the housekeeper's apartments, and say I can receive him now. My lady, who has peered all this with slight attention outwardly, looks towards Mr. Rouncewell as he comes in. He is a little over 50 perhaps, of a good figure, like his mother, and has a clear voice, a broad forehead from which his dark hair has retired, and a shrewd though open face. He is a responsible-looking gentleman dressed in black, portly enough, but strong and active. Has a perfectly natural and easy air, and is not in the least embarrassed by the great presence into which he comes. Sir Leicester and Lady Dedlock, as I have already apologized for intruding on you, I cannot do better than be very brief. I thank you, Sir Leicester. The head of the Dedlocks has motioned towards a sofa between himself and my lady. Mr. Rouncewell quietly takes his seat there. In these busy times, when so many great undertakings are in progress, people like myself have so many workmen in so many places that we are always on the flight. Sir Leicester is content enough that the ironmaster should feel that there is no hurry there, there, in that ancient house, rooted in that quiet park, where the ivy and the moss have had time to mature, and the gnarled and warded elms, and the umbrageous oaks stand deep in the fern, and leaves of a hundred years, and where the sundial on the terrace has dumbly recorded for centuries that time which was as much the property of every Dedlock while he lasted as the house and lands. Sir Leicester sits down in an easy chair, opposing his repose and that of Chesney Wold to the restless flights of ironmasters. Lady Dedlock has been so kind, proceeds Mr. Rouncewell with a respectful glance and a bow that way, as to place near her a young beauty of the name of Rosa. Now, my son has fallen in love with Rosa, and has asked my consent to his proposing marriage to her, and to their becoming engaged, if she will take him, which I suppose she will. I have never seen Rosa until today, but I have some confidence in my son's good sense even in love. I find her what he represents her, to the best of my judgment, and my mother speaks of her with great commendation. She in all respects deserves it, says my lady. I am happy, Lady Dedlock, that you say so, and I need not comment on the value to me of your kind opinion of her. That, observes Sir Leicester with unspeakable grandeur, for he thinks the Ironmaster a little too glib, must be quite unnecessary. Quite unnecessary, Sir Leicester. Now, my son is a very young man, and Rosa is a very young woman. As I made my way, so my son must make his, and his being married at present is out of the question. But supposing I gave my consent to his engaging himself to this pretty girl, if this pretty girl will engage herself to him, I think it a piece of candor to say at once I am sure, Sir Leicester and Lady Dedlock, you will understand and excuse me, I should make it a condition that she did not remain at Chesney Wold. Therefore, before communicating further with my son, I take the liberty of saying that if her removal would be in any way inconvenient or objectionable, I will hold the matter over with him for any reasonable time, and leave it precisely where it is. Not remain at Chesney Wold. Make it a condition. All Sir Leicester's old misgivings relative to Wat Tyler, and the people in the Iron Districts who do nothing but turn out by torchlight, come in a shower upon his head, the fine gray hair of which, as well as of his whiskers, actually stirs with indignation. Am I to understand, sir, says Sir Leicester, and is my lady, to understand he brings her in thus specially, first as a point of gallantry, and next as a point of prudence, having great reliance on her sense, am I to understand, Mr. Rouncewell, and is my lady to understand, sir, that you consider this young woman too good for Chesney Wold, or likely to be injured by remaining here? Certainly not, Sir Leicester. I am glad to hear it. Sir Leicester very lofty indeed. Pray, Mr. Rouncewell, says my lady, warning Sir Leicester off with the slightest gesture of her pretty hand, as if he were a fly. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.